Get everything you need to bring home the holidays on Black Friday at Menards. Doors open 6 a.m. A Nerf Blaster Dog Toy Blast Tennis Ball 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai Chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing Squish Lamps and Performax Drill Bit Sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Doors open 6 a.m. on Black Friday. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com.
Welcome to the Brews and Appraisal Views podcast, where we blend the art of appraising with a touch of insight and a dash of humor. Whether you're a trainee, a seasoned professional, or just curious about the appraisal world, you've come to the right place. So grab your favorite brew, relax, and join us for some expert tips, real-world stories, and valuable advice to help grow your appraisal business. I'm your host, Dan Lindemann, certified appraiser serving South Florida for over 20 years. Hey, so welcome back, appraisers. Today, we're going to talk about what separates a true professional from just a form filler. My guest today is Stephen R. Smith. He's been appraising since the 70s, has lived through every market cycle imaginable, and isn't afraid to call like he sees it. Stephen runs the National Appraisers Forum, an active discussion for different real estate topics, appraisal topics. He's been actively writing recently. Some of his pieces are home price trends have reversed, the importance of listing histories, payment shock is barreling down the pipeline, and comparing year-over-year price changes. Each one calls out the same issues. Too many appraisers are skipping verification, ignoring market conditions, and reporting stable when in fact it's clearly dropping. So grab your coffee, favorite brew, and we're going to get into it. So before we do that, Stephen, give your background to everybody. Let everybody know who you are, who doesn't know about you.
Well, I had a circuitous route into appraisal, started on loan servicing, loan origination, loan management, title sales, real estate sales, loan brokerage, owned a Century 21 office when I found out I don't really like managing people. And I started over as a trainee at age 29, and I was a form filler. I did, I had a minimum of 3 reports a day required by the savings and loan. We didn't have a computer, so we just hand wrote the same lame language in every report. We didn't verify anything. We just used whatever was in the comp book. And the only comp book we had was created by appraisers. Whenever they appraised a sale, they'd fill out a sheet and put it in the book. And then October 6, 1979, the world changed when the Fed decided to stop inflation and raise the discount rate. Prime rate went to 20%, 21%. Mortgage rates went to 18%. And all of a sudden, we were faced with the only comps in our book were the most likely comps to have fallen out of escrow because people couldn't qualify for loans. And we began to have a serious problem with supporting sales prices in any way, shape, or form. Yeah. I took a course from the Society of Real Estate Appraisers in the spring of 1982, which is where I really learned about the market approach and the 5 steps to the market approach, which I'd like to share because that's part of our daily life. Me and the people that work with me spend a lot of our time verifying market data. But just to run through the steps. The steps of the market approach include gathering your data from all available sources, verifying the data to find out transactionally what drove the price, motivation-wise, motivations.
Back up real quick. You broke up real quick. You said first step was gathering data.
Right. The second step is verifying the data to find out about motivations, terms, personal property or concessions packed in the sales prices, and actually adjust the data for that before you make the time adjustment, or now we call it the market condition adjustment. And what I'm seeing in the current market is about half the cities in my region show raw numbers going up and half show raw numbers going down, all of which, though, include all kinds of what I call pack to make the deals work. That can include sellers paying non-recurring closing costs, buying down the interest rates for 2 or 3 years, as well as other concessions. Builders were the first to begin offering concessions, and I probably have 60 new home tracks going in my region right now, some of which have full page ads with the concessions that they offer. But now, this year, even with all the concessions, builders have begun bringing their prices down. And it's been my experience that what happens with the new home sales price trends, the resale market follows.
New construction and then resale follows.
What happens with the new construction price trends leads the resale market, whether it's going up or whether it's going down. We have some tracks that have lowered their price 25% since 2022. And they should have been sold out already, but they haven't been sold out. Right. So now they're trying to get rid of the last of their inventory at the old prices. And a lot of the builders, the merchant builders particularly, have gone to retooling and building smaller homes so they could offer them at a lower price point. But as a residential appraiser, you don't necessarily know what's going on in the new home market or even pay attention to it. And I think that's something that we all need to consider. If there's a viable new home market in our region, it's going to be driving not only the prices, but the concessions that are included in them.
Right. So you worked, we'll backtrack a little. So you worked through multiple downturns, the 80s, 90s, 2000s, the Great Recession. What's different about this downturn coming up? What are the similarities? What are the differences this time around that you see?
Well, since COVID, prices in some cases went up 50%, with buyers rushing out of the cities, buying in the suburbs, working from home. A lot of those buyers are being called back now, number one. Number two, a lot of those loans were variable loans, and they're resetting. In some cases, the monthly payments going up 33%. I don't know anyone on salary that's gotten 33% raise in the last 3 years. So people are being squeezed.
Yeah, interest rates up, their insurance rates are up, and everything's going up. So I could see that price jumping up if they had an adjustable rate mortgage.
So what I'm seeing is, and I don't do very many Fannie Mae level houses. We do mostly litigation work, and oftentimes we're working on very large multi-million-dollar properties. But anyway, I had the occasion to work on look at an appraisal report done on a small condo that was done. The appraisal was done in August. The most recent sale in the project was $215,000. The highest sale in the last year was 250. And this listing came on the market at 219,000, basically ching off of that 215 sale. Right. A month later was reduced to 209. A month later, in the beginning of August, it was reduced to 199. An offer of 175 was put forth, and it was accepted and settled at 185. Well, percent-wise, just the difference between 215 and 185 is a big drop. And in the appraiser did a very good job of enumerating the listing history, the price reductions, the offers, the counteroffers, but didn't make any time adjustments.
Right.
And appraised the property, $185,000 sale, appraised the property for $230,000.
See, that does not make sense. I do listing appraisals, and sometimes it's for listings that have been sitting on the market and not selling. That's a huge data point. Like, hey, this was exposed to the market and is not moving. Something's wrong, and it's usually the price. So on appraising those stale listings, it's almost you're lucky because you have that market data. It's open to the, it's been exposed to the market. So you know what it's not worth. So you already know what it's not worth.
Okay, think of appraisers as being form-driven, okay? Here's an example. We had an earthquake in California in 1987 called the Loma Prieta earthquake. And At the time, I was a chief appraiser, and we had an assignment of a home in Woodside, California, which is in between San Francisco and San Jose on the west side of the 280 freeway. Well, there's a fault line that runs right through town.
Get everything you need to bring home the holidays on Black Friday at Menards. Doors open 6 a.m. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blast tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Doors open 6 a.m. on Black Friday, good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Called the San Andreas, one of the biggest fault lines in California. And I had hired the appraiser, who was a good appraiser on my approved list. And when I received the appraisal on a property in Woodside, I noticed that all the comps came from Atherton, which was adjacent, but on the other side of the 280 freeway and kind of really a different town. But so I called the appraiser up and I said, I got a question. Do you know where the fault line is in relationship to the improvements? He said, oh, yeah, it runs right through the master bedroom. Huh. I said, well, why didn't you say that on the form? He said, well, there was no checkbox.
Oh, wow.
So there's no checkbox for listing history. There is a requirement, a GSE requirement, that we report the sales history for 3 years. And you know where that requirement came from?
No.
Illegal property flipping.
Oh, right. Okay. Just so
they silently want us to be the gatekeepers on that issue. But I wrote an entire seminars on illegal flipping, and I've seen properties that have been listed, reduced. One example, listed for $1,795,000, reduced $1,499,000, $1,299,000, expired, and then sold for $2,050,000.
Something happened. So that doesn't make sense.
The appraisers were nobody that the mortgage company knew. They were just two licensed appraisers in the local market area that started their research by bracketing the sales price. If it's a fraud, it's a way to get yourself involved in that fraud.
I couldn't agree more.
So anyway, I would admonish appraisers to check the listing history of your subject and your comps so that you don't get caught in something like that. And let's see, I started the forum, National Appraiser Forum, started as a local forum for the Inland Empire after I had spent years in candidate guidance. And even after I was off the board, I would get people calling me for questions. And I realized that I'm giving an answer to someone and somebody else might have the same issue. So that was half of the impetus of starting the forum. The other half was, I had been teaching for 15 years at Cal State, and I had my students, my appraisal students, in the fall of 2015, go home and check the average household income in their zip code and the average price range in their zip code and calculate using a 33% debt ratio how much of a mortgage that income could support. And then we added a 20% down payment to that, and we call that supportable demand. Well, universally, students came back and the average price in their neighborhood was twice the supportable demand.
Wow.
That's when I began giving a talk saying the market is disconnected from fundamentals and on the cusp of turning down 25 to 50%. And it will depend upon how strong the market is and how strong the property is, or how weak the property is and how weak the market is. So we saw in outlying areas, we saw prices drop 50%. In the best areas, we saw prices drop 25%. But while I was giving that talk in February of 06 to a group of appraisers in Palm Desert, one appraiser raised their hand and said, "You're full of it. I've been appraising this market 25 years in the Palm Springs market, and our market's never gone down. We're different." Well, I knew that wasn't true. And there was an email chain between her and I and all 25 that were in that meeting. And the last email, I kept presenting more information. The last email said, "Please stop trying to cram your point of view down our throats." And that was the second half of the impetus to start the forum. So that morning I started the forum. I invited all those people in and everybody else that I had an email on. And it's been a kind of a distant mentoring project for me. I've continuously encouraged people to take advanced coursework, get away from the pressures of doing lender work, and the fee pressure as well as the time pressure. Here's the rub. Unless we have a written scope of work that eliminates our necessity to do the verifications and have support for our market data, conditions adjustments, we're obligated to do them. Whether or not we do them or not, we'll be held to that standard. And what I mean by that is lenders have a very aggressive department called the loan department. But a less aggressive department who operates much slower is the legal department. And when loan losses start mounting, appraiser liability lawsuits start increasing. And if you look at precedent-setting cases against appraisers, there's about one case every 20 years. You know why there's so few precedent level cases?
Why?
Precedent level meaning it went to the appeals court and it was upheld. The decision was upheld by the appeals court. And that only applies in the district where the court is. It doesn't apply nationwide or statewide. But nevertheless, about every 20 years, there's a precedent level case because most of the cases simply cannot be defended. If the appraiser didn't verify their data, if the appraiser didn't have any basis for their market conditions adjustments, they're not defensible.
Right.
Because, I mean, I've read depositions of appraisers being sued where they ask the man, "Have you taken any appraisal classes?" "Oh, yeah, I took all the classes from the society and all the classes from the Appraisal Institute." Then they hand them the textbook, The Appraisal of Real Estate, and they ask them to read the five steps of the market approach and ask the man, "Are these good processes and procedures to follow?" "Yes, they're good." "Is there a reason you didn't follow them?" "Oh, I wasn't paid enough money or given enough time." That's not a defense, okay?
Let's go through the verification process. Let's take it back just a little bit. You know, when you're confirming a sale, what questions are you asking the agent? You know, how deep are you going? What's the typical conversation like?
Well, first of all, appraiser needs to get into their head that they're calling someone who, let's say, on a closed sale, it's not going to make any money talking to them. So what do we have to offer them to get them to talking? So here's the way I open my conversations. "Hi, my name is Steve Smith. I'm a real estate appraiser, and I'm calling you as one of the due diligence steps of my doing the market approach to find out with regard to the sale that you handled 2 months ago, if there was anything transactionally that I need to adjust for. Were the motivations normal on both sides, or did either side have a compelling reason to close extraordinarily fast? Was there any personal property included in the transaction or fees paid by the seller? Remember, appraisers, our definition is in terms of cash to the seller. So anything the seller gives up needs to be taken back out of that price. And I have seen in the past where the transactional aspect of the sale required a minus 25% adjustment before you got to the market conditions or time.
That was just what was baked into that was personal property, the concessions, financial concessions. What was the example? What was that 25%?
Well, $1 million furniture package.
Oh, okay. Got it.
Yeah.
So it sold fully furnished by a designer. So it sold at $1 million premium because of that.
Yeah. Down to the silverware, you know, and that particular house was built as a shell for the buyer to pick out the finishes. And so they picked out.
At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
All the custom finishes as well as all the decorator items. And in second home markets, you'll see listings with, it'll say $1 million Stephen Chase furniture decor package, you know. But in other cases, in the mountains, you might be a boat on the lake. I've seen planes in hangars. One sale in the Hollywood Hills I verified included a Rolls Royce in the garage.
Wow.
Well, you know, you can blue book a Rolls Royce, a used Rolls Royce, but the point is, it was over $100,000 worth of vehicle in the garage.
And appraisers wouldn't know that. Even if that's at the $1 million price point, it would be a 1.1 million sale, and appraiser may not even know that. So they're overvaluing by 10% just by using that comp.
Just by the lack of their knowledge. Okay. Now, in the order of adjustments, it's not this way on the forms because there's not enough room on the form. Okay. In the order of adjustments as originally taught, you made your market condition, or your cash equivalency adjustments, motivations, terms, and then you did a subtotal, and then you adjusted for time or market conditions, and then location, lot size, improvement size, and so on. It makes a difference, not a huge difference, but it makes a difference. I should say, sometimes not a huge difference, sometimes a huge difference. If you don't know anything about the transactional aspect and you made no time adjustment. In the condo example that I gave you, haven't calculated, but if you subtracted 185 from 215 in a 2 month period of time, percentage wise, that's a huge adjustment.
Yeah. For 2 months, it's like 15%. Yeah, absolutely. That's huge.
So, an article that I sent you, that I wrote this past week deals with, you cannot use year to year comparisons. If the market is changing, you can only use year-to-year comparisons if the market, in fact, is stable. But as an example, in July, year-to-year comparisons in my region were showing some cities went up 1.5% or 2% during the year. But guess what? Last year, they were still going up the last half of last year. This year, they've been going down, and they've been going down double digits, like 1%, 1.5%, 2%, 2.5%, 3%, 4% a month, and appraisers are unaware of it.
Yeah, so I'm working on one now where 7 to 12 months ago, the median price was like 620. 4 to 6 months ago, it dropped to 568, and then in the past 3 months, it increased to 595. So you can't be using comp. You have to know where what point you are in that timeline, or else – It's not linear. It's going, it's like crazy poly.
Yeah, well, and the 595 sale could have had 30,000 worth of concessions in it.
Sure.
So that's the market that we're in, and unfortunately,
fluctuating. That's my term when I'm doing the appraisals. It's fluctuating.
Yeah, and it's fluctuating in a downward trend.
Yes. Yeah.
My effort is to help appraisers become aware of their responsibilities and begin to what I call do one good report a week. Verify three sales. Find out about the motivations, the terms, the personal property included, and it will be eye-opening, okay? The other thing I should say is I always, at the beginning of a verification call, offer them a current trend for the market that they're in, the market that the subject property was in that they sold or that they had the listing on, which sold. If I graph that market and I give it to them and it's a downward trend and they can see that in a graph, it helps them get to my closing question. If you had this property on the market again today and you were to sell it without the seller having to give up a penny in terms of any kinds of concessions or buy downs, could you sell it for the same price again today?
That's a good question, because if it was in contract for 3 months or whatever, and now you're at this point and they know the market, they sense the market. Agents know the market better than appraisers a lot. If they're in a farming an area, they know it way better than appraisers.
Yeah. So, and that answer to that question, it can be eye-opening. So, you know, when I learned to do this in 1982, we were making, I forget, $350 or $375 a house. I came back from taking this class, and I said to my staff, we cannot afford to do Fannie Mae appraisals. We need about $750 to pay for the time that it's going to take to do these right. And we only had lenders as clients. So we made the decision, we're going to do it anyway. We're going to eat the time that it takes to do it. And it took us a year before we had a portfolio to show anybody. But within 2 years, we had GSEs telling people to use our office. We had mortgage insurers and other investors telling people to use our market, our office, because we were addressing these issues. And that was in 1982. And during that period, the recession started on October 6, 1979, when the Fed chairman decided to stop inflation. By 82, the market was going down double digit, including Beverly Hills went down 25%. The market was so bad in 82 that the LA Combined Malibu Board did not publish a comp book in December.
And when
I called the board and I asked the executive director, how come I didn't get my comp book? He said, well, we needed 100 members to order it, and we didn't have 100 orders out of 6,000 members. What does that tell you about a dead market? You could shoot a cannon through town and not hit a sale.
Wow.
So we continued, and we continued to lose mortgage brokers first. And some direct lenders too.
Because you were marking everything, you were reporting what was actually happening.
Yes, yes. And so what? Something happened, and new clients started calling. They were quite willing to pay our fee. And in 1982 was the first year I made some really good money. In addition to my quarterly payments, I had a tax bill of $48,000.
Oh, wow.
It put me in shock. But at the same time that this was going on, I discovered illegal property flipping. And in the zip code that I live, I counted over 60 illegal flips. And I lived in a good zip code. And that's where the listing history comes in. Properties they couldn't sell would reduce, and all of a sudden it would sell for twice the last asking price. And appraisers were getting caught in that right and left. And at that time, mortgage insurers were the ones that were suing appraisers like crazy. In the LA federal court, I found 77 lawsuits by mortgage insurers against appraisers for loan origination appraisals. I began giving talks on appraisal quality control and fraud prevention to any group I could get in front of. And in the first half of 84, I was on the road giving presentations 30 days out of the first 6 months. Wow. When an investor called me, and I thought they wanted me to come do a presentation for their underwriters. So I showed up with my briefcase and my overhead projector and sat down with the head of the loan department. And he said, very simply, what's it going to take for you to go to work for us? And I said, well, I have a business. He said, you can keep it. We just want you on our team, you know. We have 180 agents across.
Get everything you need to bring home the holidays on Black Friday at Menards. Doors open 6 a.m. A Nerf Blaster Dog Toy Blast Tennis Balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai Chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing Squish Lamps and Performax Drill Bit Sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Doors open 6 a.m. on Black Friday. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Across the country in the form of bank savings and loans, thrifts, and credit unions. And we've been blindsided with some frauds. I said, well, I know. I've reviewed four of them. And each one of them was the exact same thing. List, reduced, expired, and sold for twice the price. And if an appraiser anchors on price, they can go further out in distance or further back in time. They're always going to be able to find something
out,
right?
There, for sure. Yeah.
So when that gal interrupted me and said, this market's never gone down, I wondered, how in the world could a working appraiser know that, not know that? And I finally came up with the answer. If all you're doing is looking for three closed sales less than 6 months within 15% of the sales price of your or size of your, and you don't find the three, what do? You go back in time, you go out in distance.
Yeah.
And you never research what the market's doing. You don't know what the, have no idea what the market's doing, because you're just looking for those three comps to make this deal work. And you're like essentially a walking zombie, just like the condo I referred to, the current appraisal in a market that's going down hugely. So are we an industry of licensed zombies doing thoughtless work, working with a template to make reports look good, or are we real appraisers?
That's the thing, because I think they're trying to, a lot of appraisers are in the lending box and trying to just fit it into their, the form, fit it in and say the right things because they don't want to get kicked back a QC audit or something like that. Whereas on the non-lending side, feel free to explain away. Like, it's okay to say the market was here, then went down, then went back up. Or this sale, you know, was listed really high and it was on the market way too long. Just explaining different things, it's to make the report make more sense. Just churning out a report to the lender. That's all it seems like a lot of lending work is.
Yeah. And, you know, I my heart goes out for the loan appraiser because that's where I started. And you know, I was giving a list of adjustments. I remember the first day I looked at the list and I said, well, first of all, your time adjustment's wrong. They were using 0.5% and the market was going up 1.5%. So my boss said, well, can you prove that? So I said, okay. Now, I should say this. I had completed a major in real estate. I'd had appraisal courses. I'd reviewed appraisals. So even though I was a trainee, I knew a lot more than, you know, my title gave credit for. So I did some paired sales, brought it back, show him was a 1.5% a month. And he said, okay, we'll use 3/4. My immediate response was, oh, so I get it. You don't really like that the market's going up so fast. You want to deny it. What are we going to do? Fudge the other adjustments?
Right.
And I said, furthermore, you're using, now remember, this is 1976, $1 a square foot on the lot, $20 on the house, $5,000 for a pool, $1,500 for a fireplace. And so I said, well, do you use the same time adjustment in Watts and in Beverly Hills? He never thought of that. They use the same adjustment factors in every quality range, every location, every size. Totally incongruent with how real estate is sold.
Yeah.
But it made for fast appraisals.
Like, given the technology today and the different different providers out there, it's easy to do your market conditions. It's easy to report it. You put in the data from your MLS, it'll make it look nice and grass for you. You can do the whole market. You can do your sub market. You can do, you know, just competing properties in a different area and just test and measure and see which one makes the most sense. But it's, you have to be doing it. I don't know how appraisers are not doing it. It's so easy to do.
Well, you know, let's just say appraisers are human beings. Human beings have the ability to rationalize their behavior regardless of what they're doing. So they're no less human than other people in other industries. My heart is saddened that more appraisers have not wanted to advance their career, have not taken any advanced coursework. A lot of appraisers, they took their classes to get their license, and since then they haven't taken a meaningful course, just CE classes. And I have encouraged appraisers my entire career to take some advanced courses, become credentialed. You know, now a degree is required. You know, get your degree. And I'm proud to say we probably have a dozen members of the National Appraisers Forum that since they joined the forum have gotten their degrees, have gotten their SRAs, have gotten their MAIs, and no longer rely upon doing lender work for a living. It's not that we can't do lender work. We can't afford to do lender work at the fee level and at the speed level that they require. And I don't really understand why it's such a pressure speed-wise, because as an example, if you open an escrow today, you're not going to get a title report for 2 or 3 weeks, no matter what. So why do they need the appraisal tomorrow? You know, think of this though. If they pressure the appraiser to work fast, it precludes them from stopping to think about what they're doing. It precludes them from asking questions when they see something that doesn't make sense. So, and I've seen this in the credit world where someone gets their hot button pushed and they get packed into buying a stereo or a dishwasher that's more expensive than what they can really afford. Salesmen are really good at packing people into deals, including real estate salesmen. I went through all the sales training in the world in my early 20s. You know, real estate sales is not about real estate at all, practically. You know what it's about?
What's that?
Pushing people's hot buttons, getting them to sign up on a listing, getting them to sign a contract on a purchase. It's manipulative techniques, okay? You want to hear a technique?
Let's hear it. Let's hear a good sales technique.
So I'm on a listing presentation, And not that realtors care about square footage or room sizes, but we were trained to have the seller, when we're doing a listing presentation, hold one end of the tape. And we would go around and measure the rooms and have them fill out the room sizes, right?
Yeah.
When we get back to the kitchen table, we say, press hard. There's 8 copies of the listing agreement. Now you want me to take a sales, a buyer through that house? I'll take a buyer through that house. So I'm showing the house. I got a husband and wife and their kids. And I say to the wife, how would your sofa look in this living room? Would your dining table fit in here? Whose bedroom will this be? It's got nothing to do with real estate. It has everything to do with techniques. So think of this. The next time you go out to appraise a sale, how accomplished was the salesman's techniques? How deep did they pack this person into this property? Now, you take a buyer with blemished credit, and I've seen this since the beginning of my experience in credit. My experience in retail credit goes back to 1967. Someone with blemished credit will pay more for a washing machine, a car, or a house if you just get them the loan. People with blemished credit can be manipulated into paying more than someone with good credit.
Because they have no other option. They have other options, but they have no other have no other options.
So what happens is they get preyed upon.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And serial refinancing too. That's terrible. Like people refinancing 10, 15 times in these certain areas, that's the loan company just taking advantage of those people.
Well, that's where the term predator.
Get everything you need to bring home the holidays on Black Friday at Menards. Doors open 6 a.m. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blast tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Doors open 6 a.m. on Black Friday. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Came in, but it was going on when I was a loan rep back in the 70s. I worked 12 weeks as a mortgage rep for a CalFed mortgage, and every Monday morning we had a sales meeting. And you know what the central talk on the sales meeting was? How much pack you got in the deal, your deals last week. In other words, if the rate was 6% and we charged 6.5%, we got 0.25% spoof.
Right.
If the credit report was $25 and we charged 50, we got half of that extra 25. And that's called pack, okay? And so there was this one guy named Winton White, and I would describe him as having a wardrobe like George Peppard from Breakfast at Tiffany's. Every day was an ensemble. I never saw him in the same suit, 12 weeks.
Wow.
Everything, tie tack, sunglasses, shoes, he was dressed to the nines. And when our average house price in the San Fernando Valley was $25,000, he was getting $2,500 in pack on his deals and proud of it.
Wow.
So that all gets packed into the loan. In my office, when we have a sale that was a low equity sale, we know that there's an adjustment and we'll zero in on that one. We may not call on the one that was 20 or 30% down, but we can always see there's a difference. As a young loan rep, when I was going to take a VA or an FHA loan, I literally was instructed to look in the comp book to see if there were any other sales with VA or FHA loans. Otherwise, we would not be able to support the price. Conventional buyers won't pay the same price.
Wow.
Someone that saved up 20% down payment is going to negotiate for the best price. Someone with blemished credit, it's kind of like they'll bend over and let you take advantage of them if you just get them approved. And then they're really screwed.
Yep. Yeah, so, in any downturn, they're screwed because they're underwater.
Yeah.
Actually, from day one, they're underwater, not even if it's a downturn, if they need to sell it next week.
So you ask me what's going to happen. Well, we're going to see price declines of 25 to 50%. That simple.
So you
this run-up was artificial. Demand is pulled back. The interest is killing people on their adjustable loans. And we're going to begin to see massive defaults. And with every downturn, the lenders have all blamed the appraisers on their loan problems.
Yeah. And there's no need. It's not going to stop now. It's not going to stop this time. They're going to continue the blame.
So my admonition is, do one good report a week. Verify your three sales. You'll find out more about the market by talking to market participants than staring at a computer or staring at a comp book. What's missing from those, sometimes they don't even get the physical aspects right, but what's missing is universally the transactional aspects. And it's the only way that I think an appraiser can have this burden lifted from them is if we have a scope of works that says, I'm going to use recorded sales information from two nationally recognized sources. I'm not going to do any independent verifications. You get that in writing, and you're off the hook. How many lenders are going to sign that? Not one.
Yeah, not many. Yeah. And on listings, when I'm doing, let's say I'm doing one for a bank or something on a sale, and the listing agents there, I always ask them, and it's good information to find out how many showings they had and how many written offers, because that information is like gold. If there's been one showing and one offer in 8 months, that says a lot. But if there's been 10 offers around the same price in the first week, like the market's like screaming, hey, this is kind of where it should be at. So that's a question I always ask, and I'm dumbfounded when agents say, wow, no appraiser has ever asked that question before. I'm like, why? It's a good question to figure out everything about it on the sale, on that sale.
Well, I mean, I can't tell you how many revealing things we've discovered by making verification calls. Went right near my office, there's a mountain behind me, and we had 640 acres to appraise on that mountain, which is just open space. And I have a trainee named Carson, and he was working on it. And his very, very first verification call was to a broker who's a CCIM and an MAI. And I know him as past president of our local chapter. So he calls him up on this sale, and the first thing he says, you cannot use this sale. This was sold to the adjacent Indian tribe. Nobody in the world would ever pay the price they paid for this. They needed it because it was adjacent, and they needed to expand their tribal holdings. So we got 640 acres right next to a sale that sold for $25,000 an acre, and ours is worth $5,000.
Yeah. And you wouldn't have known that if they didn't call.
Yeah. I mean, the point is there was nothing physical about it that was different. It was all transactional, motivational. Here's an example. Near the end of my sales career, in my farm area, which if you don't know what a farm area is, agents are told to pick out an area of 500 homes and concentrate their listing activity in that area. So this was an area near my office, and I would start out every Saturday morning walking, knocking on doors up the street. And there was this one guy who was a retired IRS agent, and we'd have coffee on Saturday mornings and talk, but he was never interested in selling. He called me one Sunday about 6 o'clock in the evening and said, Smitty, I need to sell my house. And I said, well, you've never wanted it, so what's going on? He said, I'm dying. I just paid cash for a condo in Palm Springs for mom. I need to close escrow by Friday.
Wow.
I got on the phone and I called every investor I knew. And I told them, we can't get you market value. So his house was worth about 60. I got him an offer at 50. I took the loan app into Great Western Savings on Monday. We had an approval on Wednesday. We closed on Friday, and he died on Saturday.
Oh, wow.
Now, unless you made that verification call, you would never know that that comp needed to be adjusted up 20%.
Right.
Okay. On the other hand, I've seen properties sell where the price is what I call a hostage price. Like the Indians needed that land and paid right. $25,000 an acre for $5,000 land. Okay. I don't know how many times I've seen, I'll give you a good example. You know who Lionel Richie is?
Yes.
Singer? Okay. Yeah. First of all, I appraised an office building he bought off of on Doheny Drive, south of Wilshire Boulevard. And it was a small office building. This is back in the early 80s. And it was built for a law partner. So it had a central reception and then two partner offices. And, you know, it wasn't big, like 6,000 square feet. I couldn't support the sales price. It was a $1.5 million sale. I came up with $1.1 million. I called the loan officer, which was at Brentwood Savings, and I said, I can't support the sales price. It's only worth $1.1 million. Do you want to tell Mr. Richie? He said, no, this is a good broker loan. A good agent brought me this deal. He brings me a lot of deals. I'm not going to clear the loan, you know, because of this. And he only wants a 750 loan so I can make it with the $1.1 million value. So, okay. So 2 years later, Richie's attorney subpoenas my appraisal out of the blue. So I call him up and I said, what's going on? And he said, well, Mr. Richie found out that the property was never worth it. And I said, well, why did you have to subpoena my appraisal? He said, well, the bank lost it. And I said, well, I gave him three originals. I gave him three
originals. They lost it.
So I sent him the appraisal, and he sued everybody except me. A year later, the attorney calls me up, said, I need you to do an appraisal on Mr. Richie's house. And I knew the house because I had appraised it before he bought it. It was on Funchal Road in the Bel Air Estates, and it was a nice property, but the prior owner, a guy named Carlin, was a composer and had turned the garage into a studio. Well, Mr. Richie had a brand new White Cloud Silver Rolls he wanted to garage. And so on the left of the motor court, he was going to build a garage for his new car. Well, when they came out to inspect the setting, the foundation, they found that he was encroaching one foot into the adjacent neighbor's rear yard. The adjacent neighbor faced another street. And this part of the yard was behind a wall of eucalyptus trees.
Yeah.
It was you never even saw this part of the yard, right? So I launched into how to do this. What's a fair way to do this appraisal? This is very similar to eminent domain, which is the definition is the highest price measurable. If you're going to take someone's land they don't want to sell, pay them the highest price you can come up with.
Yeah.
So I said, well, how can I come up with the highest price? If I just appraise this land, and it was between 1 foot and 3 feet long, 300 feet long. One and 3 feet wide, 300 feet long. It was a zigzag, right? All he was doing was straightening out the rear property line.
Yeah.
So I do the appraisal and I came up with like $25 a foot. As if it were a sellable lot in Bel Air, right? So they go to the neighbor and the neighbor says, thank you for getting a professional appraisal. I want 50. Mr. Ritchie took out his check and knowingly wrote a check for twice the price the property was worth. Now, when I used to teach uniform standards, I would tell this story. When we do our job right, we give the client the opportunity to make that informed decision. When we fudge the value to make the deal work, we take that choice away from the buyer.
And I completely agree. The appraisal helps you make an informed decision, helps your clients make an informed decision. That's what I use in some of my sales techniques or slogans is, this will help you make a better informed decision. Like when you're doing, especially cash buyers, when you're working with cash buyers, all they want to know is like, oh, hey, this is kind of near what I'm asking for. I really like this property. I'm going to buy it anyways, but at least they know. And then you're totally correct.
We get a lot of referrals. Not a high volume, but we get a number of referrals every year where a buyer wants an appraisal before they make an offer. And it's always multi-million dollar properties for us, okay? So I had a case in Palm Springs where both the listing and selling agent referred the buyer to me. And I offered to meet with them once I finished the appraisal, which I did. I met them at the property itself, which was Palm Springs is an older city, but this neighborhood was going through transition where they were tearing down the old Spanish houses, 3,000 or 4,000 square feet and building 8,000 or 10,000 square feet modern houses with all the accoutrements. So I meet with the buyer, the husband and wife, and she was a builder, a commercial builder in Chicago, and he was a financial analyst. And I told him the scope of my research, where I had looked, what I had considered, what I zeroed in on, and I could not support the price. It was a $7 million price, and I came up with $6 million. And you know what? They had their agent show them all the comps. They had seen every comp that I used. They had physically seen every comp I considered and every comp I had used. And then I said to them, tell me why you bought this house. And he said something very simple. Because I can walk down to the corner coffee shop and read my paper on Sunday mornings.
And it was worth $1 million more for him.
He paid $500,000 more than he knew I could support.
But if you think of it from his perspective too, he used your appraisal and he saved himself $500,000 because he was willing to spend seven.
Yeah, so I get a call from what had been a good client, First Republic Bank in San Francisco. And I get a call from a loan agent who said, we have a problem with an appraisal. And I said, well, send it to me and I'll take a look. And I knew the appraiser. He was on my approved list when I was a chief appraiser, good appraiser. And so I called him up and I said, hey, Dean, you know, I get a call to look at your report. What's going on here? He said, well, I just got off the phone with the loan officer and the agent. And I explained to him that I had appraised four of the five sales that I'm using as a comp, and I'm appraising the pending sale that I use as a comp. I know about everything included in their contracts, their personal property, etc. This is a new house built on one of the few vacant lots in a 1960s neighborhood. They've sold it as if it were in a country club, which it's not. It's across the street, but it's not in the country club. So I called the loan officer up and I said, look, what if Dean is right and it's not worth the sales price? It was $1.5 million sale price, $1.25 million appraisal. I said, would you want your buyer to be able to make a decision knowing that it's not worth the sales price? Do they really want to move forward? Or, you know, I'm not going to pressure Dean to move his appraisal value. You know, give your buyer a choice. She called me, and this is someone that I had known for 4 or 5 years. And I knew that in that bank, their loan officers got some kind of a commission. It wasn't very big, plus a salary. But any commission they got, if the loan went bad in the first 2 years, they paid double back.
Oh, wow. That's a good incentive to make good loans.
So they had a disincentive to fudge numbers, right? So she calls me up the next day. And I got to tell you, when I've been telling this story for 20 years, 25 years. I usually cry right at this point. She said, I thank you, and the borrower thanks you, and please thank me.
Oh, that's great.
When we do our job right, we do the buyer a favor if it's not worth it.
I agree. And it's not our job to shove it through. It's just to give honest numbers and let people make the decision from there. That's it.
Yeah. And use principles and processes, you know. I would encourage everyone to look at step one and two, look at the transactional aspect, and don't rely on published information for your market condition adjustments. Do your own for the market segment you're working in. If you don't know how to do it, I can show you within about an hour and a half or 2 hours. I can show you how to do a spreadsheet and calculate time adjustments. Any nationally published time adjustment that's year-to-year averages is wrong. It's wrong if the market's going up. It's wrong if the market's going down. And I actually wrote something this week with one of the articles I sent you. How long is a market stable?
You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call. Because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com.
I don't think it's always fluid. I don't think it is. I think it's fluid all the time.
It's going up and down. It doesn't go flat for years at a time.
Yeah.
It's stable when it's transitioning.
So regarding the verification process, so at a minimum, I want just appraisers to take this away. Like when you're documenting this in your appraisal report about the verification process, what are you saying? I spoke with the agent. They confirmed it sold for this price. There were no financial concessions involved. There was no furniture involved. What are you putting in your appraisal?
After I was hired as a chief appraiser to stop appraisal fraud, I asked the chief underwriter why they hired me. And just before I got that call, I had reviewed 6 appraisals that were funded loans. Unbeknownst to me, they were in default. Each one of them was a fraud. And I re-verified every sale and then gave them what I call a market data array, which was 2 dozen sales that competed in the same price range with the subject.
Yeah.
And then I would write, I talked to the listing agent on sale number one. The buyer was from out of town and had 1 week to buy a property and made a full price offer on the first property his wife liked. And he paid too much. In talking with the agent, I'm adjusting that sale down 15%. Sale number two, the seller was in dire straits and under tremendous financial pressure and took an offer that was a lowball offer, 15% below the asking price, which had been priced reasonably. I'm adjusting that sale up for motivation. Sale number three included that Silver Cloud Rolls Royce in the garage, worth a book value of a wholesale book value of $100,000. So anyway, what she said to me was, your reports stood head and shoulders above everyone else. We could follow the breadcrumbs of your thought process and agree with you. And I've been trying to teach appraisers to do that since the 1980s. I actually got in trouble as a kid and a guidance chairman for telling appraisers, you know, have you ever taught classes?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. So I taught college for 15 years, but I taught society and institute classes too, practically. You can give 25 students a written assignment. You can give them written or oral instructions, and you can give them an example of what you expect. And you know what you'll get as a result? 25 different interpretations.
Yep.
So what you think you say and what they think they hear can be different, okay? I found in training appraisers that until they've had at least two or three advanced courses, they're difficult to train. You know why? Your words fall off their back like water on a duck. They may shake their head, but it's not sinking in. So if I actually created an appraisal matrix, a hiring matrix that gives credit. It's a 1,000-point grading system, and it gives credit for having a license. You get 5 points for having a license.
Five points.
You get 10 or 20 points for every advanced course you took.
Okay.
And my threshold is, if someone gets 375, I'll interview them.
Okay.
But in the day when I was doing the CE courses, 1999 to 2003, I would tell people, you know, do one good job a week. Verify your market data. Write the breadcrumbs like you were doing a math problem. Let the teacher, let the reader understand your logic and reasoning. Stop this, I adjusted a dollar for this, $5 for this, $10 for that. Where does that come from? Right. You know, just stating what you did gives it no power at all. If you say, look at the market is dynamic and I didn't find enough sales that were within 15% of the size of my subject, but I did some pairings and I supported a size adjustment at $320 a square foot, which I'm applying to comp number three because it's more than 15% smaller than the subject.
Yeah.
You give the reader a chance to come along with you till they get to your final value. Anyway,
so tell them what you did and how you did it and make it easy to understand on the reports. Make it easy to understand. It's not too hard.
Where I got in trouble with the Canada guidance was, even though I said do one good report a week and put it in that your experience credit file, because if I'm on your committee, I'm going to look to see if you verified your market data, right? Someone went back to the president and said, if I do what Steve says, I can't make a living. I didn't say verify every sale on every assignment. I said verify comps on one assignment per week. And that got me in trouble with the then leadership.
Touching back to something else, verifying the sale with the agent, you said something before in the past about how you would tell, like, it was you were using calling high-end agents that had a listing closed, and you were giving them recaps of your data, like, hey, I've confirmed X, Y, and Z sale that closed or whatever, and that's gotten you business from those agents just by calling them and just telling them that you verified just five sales and what the results were, and you printed out some report or something and sent to them.
Yeah.
What was that marketing tech? What'd you do to market to those agents? Because I think there's value in that just by doing your job.
Yeah. First of all, you need to have something to offer them, I think, because we're taking up their time when they're not going to make a commission off of us. And if you don't have something to offer them, they're going to try to brush you off or maybe not even return a call or an email. To the extent that you might be able to share market analysis in the market area that you're calling about, send them a graph of what's going on. I can literally download a data set and create a graph in less than 2 minutes. And then I do what I call making it pretty. I put in the colors, I change the size of the data points, the thickness of the line, the colors of the line. Here's a good example of winning a case with a graph. I had a judicial foreclosure. Do you know what a judicial foreclosure is?
Yes.
Okay. So in a judicial foreclosure, if you think you're going to have a deficiency and you get a judgment, you can go after the borrower for the deficiency. And the borrower filed bankruptcy to forestall the foreclosure. And the comps that the debtor's appraiser used were old sales in a declining market. I made a graph of 25 sales. And I colored all of his sales, which were above the trend line, in red.
Okay.
And I colored the trend line in blue, and I colored all of my comps in green. And they were on both sides of the trend line, and they were the freshest data.
Hmm. So your judgment, data looked more unbiased versus his data, which was all above the line and older. Yours was spread out and... Yeah, I guess that's a great visual.
So, and I lost this letter somewhere along the road, but the judge wrote a letter, wrote in his decision that Mr. Smith provided compelling testimony in the face of rigorous cross-examination.
Wow, and you lost that letter? That would be framed on my wall.
I know. But the point is, if we do our job right, bring on the cross-examination. I got nothing to hide. I didn't do anything wrong. Meaning there's nothing to fear about doing litigation work. Just do the steps of the process.
And yeah, I used to fear it as well. But once you get comfortable doing your appraisal and explaining what you did, how you did it, it's easy just to explain what you did.
Yeah. Now, we charge more for anything that's litigation than we would for a loan.
I do as well.
And it depends on the kind of litigation. But as an example, if you can learn to do eminent domain, which is when someone wants to widen a street or take an easement on your property or, anything like that. In California, the minimum fee is $500, $5,000, regardless of it's a house or a piece of land.
Oh, wow. So
if you want to give yourself a raise, take a course in eminent domain. And then there are attorneys that just specialize in eminent domain. I am saddened by the fact that there are a lot of appraisers that specialize in working for public agencies. and they pick the lowest price sales over and over again.
And that's just to keep getting continuous work from those agencies?
Yeah, imagine one agency giving $100,000, $200,000 worth of work a year. And then, like I have a case right now with Burlington Northern, they're acquiring 4,500 acres, okay? Their appraiser came from out of the county. He is designated. And the first appraisal that I faced him on was zoned commercial. And he used R20 and R40 land sales.
Is that those are residential zonings?
Yeah, 20-acre minimum, 40-acre minimum. And the subject is a 5-acre commercial lot on Main Street.
Oh, wow. They're not even similar.
Not similar in any way, right?
Yeah.
So I do that. I did that actually for a property owner, and then I referred him to an eminent domain attorney. Well, the eminent domain attorney had another case in the same city, the same Burlington Northern case, same appraisers, same comps.
Wow.
Pick the cheapest comps and use them over and over again for hundreds and thousands of appraisals. It's not difficult to stand up and be cross-examined when you've used proper comparables, you verified your comparables, you have a basis for your adjustments. And I've seen clients, what settled was hundreds of thousands more than what they originally offered. I just kept taking classes. I ended up with a degree in real estate finance and a master's in real estate appraisal, the MAI and the SRA. And I'm proud that I did that, you know. And I'm proud that I didn't just stay doing the lender work I started out doing. My first fee job was $50 a report.
Granted, I've only been appraising since 2002. My training fees were, I think, like $150, but that was in 01, 02.
Mm-hmm.
So, and if I looked at those reports today, I'd be super embarrassed, but I don't know.
I have a favorite saying that the sins of the appraiser is covered up by a rising market.
And thankfully, those are covered. They aren't coming back to me.
We are in a market that's soft to declining, and our sins are not going to be covered up. And when they come after us, they're coming after us using our own principles and processes.
Right, in which we should be doing.
So
Alen, I know we're running long. We're going to wrap it up here in a second. The overwhelmed appraiser doing lending work right now, what's your advice to them?
Where do you want to be in 5 years? Do you want to be at the same level? But bear in mind, they're going to do everything they can to eliminate you. They don't want to have to use you. So what are you going to do about that? You have to take advanced courses. You have to get up the ladder, and how you get there is an individual thing. But it starts with coursework, and it starts with doing what we're supposed to be doing and not what we've been able to get by with doing.
Excellent.
So my friend George Dell talks about evidence-based valuation and leaving breadcrumbs for the reader to understand your logic and reasoning. Even when we don't have great data, we still can bring logic and reasoning to what we did and explain what we did in such a way that I like to think of explaining it so that a 10th grader would understand it.
I agree. So, I like that.
Anyway, I'm always available if someone has a problem. Feel free to join the National Appraisers Forum on Group.io.
Where do they find that? Just go to Group.io, Google google.io.
Yeah, just type in National Appraisers Forum. It'll pop up.
It's, can you allow any appraiser around the country to join that?
Yeah.
I will say I've been a member of that for many years, and I always appreciate the discussions on that forum. They're a lot more, they seem to be a lot more educated and thorough than a lot of other posts on other, you know, social media
platforms. We have some rules, okay? We don't let any politics in, no religion, no flaming, no attacking. If someone gets out of line, I have 10 moderators, all with 30 plus years experience. We'll call an appraiser or send him an email. You know, we'll shut down a thread if someone starts attacking.
Yeah.
But it's in terms of substance, it's the most substantive appraisal forum out there, as far as I know. And of course, I'm always feeding it with new stuff, like the stuff I sent you, I'll put in the forum.
Yeah.
Go to the files section and you'll see all kinds of helpful things, including I'm working on something called the Anatomy of an Appraisal Fee.
Yeah, have I've seen that document. That's a good one. That's a good one. How to charge.
Yeah. And I like to think of it as my old friend who was a prop maker for the movies. At the time, he said, I charge $350 a day for myself and $350 a day for my toolbox.
I like it.
So, you know, get more tools in your box, practice proving things, supporting and documenting things, and your reputation will begin to change with each new report. It takes a year or more for a reputation to change, but only us as an individual can make a change. It's a choice. Anyway, started out, I wore three-piece suits every day, and now I wear Hawaiian shirts every day, unless I'm borrowing money from the bank.
All right, so appraisers, you heard him. Just start this week. Just do one good job. Verify three of those sales you're using in your appraisal, and just start with one good job a week. That's all you need to start with. And where do you want to be in 5 years? That's Stephen's advice. I really appreciate you coming on, Stephen. And I'm going to end it here, but hang around and I'm going to bring you back for some additional questions. All right. I appreciate it. Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on the Brews and Appraisal Views podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode and found some value in it, which you can apply to your appraisal business. If you enjoyed it, please subscribe and leave a review. It really helps us reach more appraisers like you. For more tips and to connect with other appraisers, visit referappraisals.com. Until next time, keep brewing up success in your business, and I'll catch you on the next episode.
You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com.
My place in tech changes every day, but I don't fear the future, because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts, so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself.